One and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 24. I'm actually sure this time. More stuff and junk. I am Chris Mosby.
Caleb Gerard.
And I'm Murray Fox.
And this week we're going to be just talking about different various things from the comic book world. Give a status update on the comic that my story is going to be on, and I believe Caleb and Murray has some things to talk about, books they're reading. I might throw in there since I've read quite a bit this weekend. And we have an email from our England correspondent.
Oh, let's start there.
Yes, let's.
Let's start there. So, Robin Bunting, the English contingent of our fan base, which I have no idea how big that fan base is, but...
Well, we get... I was going to have stats ready, and I forgot. But we get hundreds of downloads a month, so... Huh?
Then I think that... I guess that's good. I have no idea, so...
Yeah. While you're doing that, I'll maybe pull some up and talk about that, too.
I guess that's better than ones of downloads a month.
Yes, so. Yes.
Okay. All right, so Robin starts off, "Hey guys, I haven't emailed in a few weeks due to work commitments and generally being busy. I've been keeping up listening to the show, though, on my walks home from work." Oh, hopefully they're long walks because we tend to have long shows. let me see. "Firstly, wanted to say what a good job you're doing with comic reviews and not putting out much in the way of spoilers."
I hate spoilers.
Spoilers suck, and we have a spoiler-free zone here that we try and maintain.
We try to, yes.
Try to. Unless it's old. I mean, that's...
Yeah, you know, if it's more than a week, then it's fair game. No, just kidding. kidding.
Robin, listen quick. Let me see. "I'm generally behind in my reading..." Oh, okay, there we go. "I'm generally behind in my reading due to all the good stuff out there at the moment." Good point. "When I listen to you guys, most of the time you manage to talk about a comic in what seems like detail without giving any spoilers, which is awesome." Hey, we're awesome.
We do that? Oh, I guess we do.
"I also quickly wanted to say the news you have been putting out in the episodes about Batman crossovers, etc., has been interesting. Though I read previews every month, I don't really go much beyond this and see what's upcoming in the world of comics, so the info you have been putting out there is really useful. Robin, you and me both. I avoid the quote-unquote news sites, too. So my news comes via Facebook or, as you will hear later in this episode, these conversations. So I share your love of surprise there, Robin. Now for a couple questions, if I may. I have recently bought tickets along with a good friend to go to the London Comic Con in about 5 weeks. It will be my first con and have no idea what to expect. Assuming it will be similar to North American cons, can you give me any info, any tips to get me ready? What have been your great con moments?" Well,
isn't that the one that the CGS guys are helping with?
Absolutely.
Okay, I thought so. Go ahead. Continue. So,
you're going to have a lot of American influence in this con there, Robin, from what I understand. I mean, you got the Comic Geek Speak guys, who are all Americans, are going to be – I think they're getting a chance to put a lot of input into that con over there. So my advice to you
– bring lots of money.
Yeah, bring money.
Bring your own. Get a big bottle of water and a couple of sandwiches and put it in your bag. Because they're going to charge 400 times what, you know, more likely. Now, not anything against that's just typical, you know.
Absolutely. Do your drinking outside the con, too, because if they happen to have a bar, which some cons do, they, again, just like with the food and the regular drinks, they will charge you an arm and a freaking leg. So beware. Chris is absolutely right.
Forgot, you know, that the last time I went to a con and was not pleasantly surprised.
my biggest piece of advice, be patient. It can be very, very frustrating. Some of the waits and such. Just
quiet. It's my phone, sorry.
It's okay. Wow. So that's someone was beaming up. So just be patient. You know, eventually everything you want to see, you'll get to see if you're going to be there for the full five freaking days. Wow.
Yeah, it's a big con.
So enjoy, but be just Like waiting in line for anything, it'll come. Anybody else? Advice?
Don't be surprised if there's going to – well, see, this is England. North American cons, and I've only been to a couple, but I know something that a lot of people complain about is one is the lack of bathing by the fellow people that go to these cons. Now, it being in London and they're so much more civilized over there, at least I've heard, that might not be a problem. But, you know, don't be one of those people and make sure you get some good shower in and all that good stuff. So
be respectful of the professionals too. I mean, as I've mentioned before, you're going to have to bring your patients with you, but realize that as patient as you've had to be, everyone else who's in line or waiting has also had to be patient. So try not monopolize, the pro's time, or if you bump into one on the floor, they're there because they're professionals and they want to be recognized, but at the same time, don't pull a Wayne and Garth on them and we're not worthy. It's kind of geeky.
Yeah, and sometimes it embarrasses them and makes it awkward for everyone.
Yeah. Unless it's Alan Moore, then by all means, go ahead.
Yeah.
Kiss his feet.
Yeah, and try not to have your – if you meet your – this is something that I know has kind of happened to me, and I've been pleasantly surprised and disappointed in different instances. If you meet these creators – and they end up being a total dick, don't take it personal. It might just be having a bad day, or they just might be that way to everybody. John Byrne being the perfect example that I learned at a couple of cons I went to. But most of them are really nice people. But like George Perez, for example, he's my favorite artist. I've mentioned him several times, and both times I met him and he took a picture, he was the nicest guy you ever want to meet. So it just depends. So that's my 2 cents. Actually, or is that a pound? I don't know what the exchange rate is.
Euro.
Okay, euro. Okay.
Excellent. Yeah, I don't know that I have. I mean, I go to cons and stuff, but usually I just go for the books and stuff. I never go. Mm-hmm. I don't go in for the signings and the lining ups and I'll go to panels and stuff, but I don't generally go to meet the creators all that much. Well, I mean, I guess in Artist Alley, wander through Artist Alley and I'll see what catches my eye there. But I'm not one to stand in line like to get, I don't know, William Shatner's.
Well, that would cost $150. So
see, there you go. I would rather buy 100 comics.
Yeah, it just depends on who's there. Because, I mean, the first con I went to, I drove like 7 hours, and it was just because Perez was there. And if I got anything else out of the con and was there like 2 days, then it was all gravy after that. So, I mean, that's, how that goes. Yeah, I have a lot of those pictures up on Facebook. I'll have to post them in our deal so everybody can see them.
Cool. Bring a list of what you want to buy, Robin, because, or whoever's going to a con, because as you hear many times on various podcasts, people end up buying dupes of things because they think they're duplicates because they don't think they have it.
Yeah, good point.
And then
they
get home, they go, oh crap, now I got 5 copies of the same book. So
there was a time I missed the time when I could actually just remember what I needed. But it's like just look at one and say, oh well, yeah, I have never seen that before, so. Not exactly the case anymore.
I have done that. I've done that at the same con on the same day. I've gone to one. it's oh my god. It was like a All-Star Squadron. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I picked it up at one booth, walked down a couple of paces. Oh, I need this one still. Picked it up again. Realized 2 seconds later. Oh. I got it.
So what, it wasn't even hours later. It was like 10 minutes.
It was – seriously, it was like 10 minutes and me not updating my little list.
Oh, Lord, dude.
So Robin goes on to ask, he says, it may seem to be a bit cheesy, but now we are beginning 2012. What would you say were your favorite comics of 2011, and what was the biggest surprise that you didn't expect to like but do? I say we save that for a later episode. I think it's a great point.
Write that down. Okay. Oh, I will. Okay, 2011. Best books of 2011. Didn't we talk about that, doing that once? We never did, did we?
We did, but we never followed through. We actually now have like 3 or 4 backed up ideas here, which is good.
Yeah. Usually we figure it out about 5 minutes before we start, so. Or a day or two before. But anyway, that's too much behind the curtain. We don't want to burst anyone's bubble of our excellent professionalism.
Okay, so you have talked about digital comics previously. I got a generic tablet for Christmas, and I've been reading back catalogs of things that would be too expensive to try and find the issues for now. I still want to get all my ongoing comics in print. I was wondering if you guys have differing opinions to air, or if you're thinking the same. Again, I think that's maybe if not a whole show topic, at least.
I know I've been struggling with that myself.
So
anyway,
another topic, at least for a part of a show. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it is a good idea.
All right, let's come back to digital.
Yes, we will come back to that.
Okay.
Let's see if it's your word.
Says you're finally Chris. Chris, this is directed directly at you, man. Mm-hmm. Can I ask how your comic is going and when it's going to be in print so I can make sure to check it out? Looking forward to the show as always. Have fun, Robin. So.
Okay, well, what basically happened.
Real quick.
Tales from the Wine Box Experience Genesis is the name of it. We have pretty much everybody's art done. The last person kind of had a unique situation. He got his art teacher to do the art for free, and he kept getting paid gigs he had to take over, so it was delayed. But he's finally lettering those pages. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. Once that actually comes out, I'll go and maybe even have a couple of them come on a podcast to help promote it for all those several hundred people that actually listen. Try to get onto CGS maybe with it somehow. But anyway, that's what we're waiting on. He's done with the lettering. There's one of us that's like been kind of keeping everybody on an even keel. The one that's been actually talking to Indie Planet and Kaboom, that's who's doing the actual book. And once I get a link, I'll make sure it gets out there. I might just spam everybody and see how that goes. So I don't know what the price point's going to be yet either. So I'll probably have several copies of my own that I'll get. And I don't know. I might hand them out to random people on the street just for the hell of it. And the local comic shop said he would sell them too. So I'll probably have them for sale there, which would be really cool. So that's where it's going. I'm just waiting. My stuff's been done for a while. Paid the artist. I don't know if he got euros out of it or not. It was all through PayPal. So, while we're in between topics, I just pulled up stats from my web host, how many downloads we've had. Okay. When we started in September, we had a total of 453 downloads. In October, it went up to 501. In November, 647. And in December, we had a big jump. It went from 647 to 957 episode downloads in 1 month.
Wow.
And we're not even done with this month, and we're at 876 for this month.
How much?
876 for this month already. Cool. So we're expanding. So that's pretty good.
There's a prize for the 1,000th downloader.
Yeah. Now, I downloaded it off of our feed to make sure everything works. So take at least one off of those numbers, and that's probably me. Just to be, full, so. Anyway, but that's what we're looking at. That's not too bad. It's a big jump. That was almost 300.
That's like 150% jump since the beginning. Good for us.
It's doing pretty good.
Look at you doing the math. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
It's my day job.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. I just click the mouse all day. That's what I do.
Matt.
But yeah, that's what we're waiting on mine, and that's about it. So next up.
That's awesome, man. I been there a couple times, and it's this is obviously when you're done and you're just waiting on everyone else to pull their stuff together, and then put it out there.
I really did think I was going to be the one that was going to be late because I was just having a hard time, you know, getting feedback from the artist. But he did good, so it worked out pretty well. I know you. I think both of you have seen it. I don't know. I think maybe only Caleb has seen all of it, or
yeah,
one of them.
Picture two.
Yeah, that's right. I posted one page up on there. So yeah, it's just waiting. I'm pretty happy with it.
And you joke about giving it to the people on the street, but if you read any of the, you know, like script writing books or you know, screenwriting books, they always say talk to strangers about it. You know, mm-hmm. ask the guy in line. You know, the guy in line in front of you at the coffee shop.
Right.
Say, hey, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, what I was thinking about doing is because I don't know how much it's going to cost me. So I mean, I'm almost into like a grand already. I think in my own money. Well, if you count the class, because I had that was like $500 just for the class, and then to pay. Well, actually, it's closer to. Yeah, no, it's pretty close to a grand already. So it just depends on how many I can afford, and probably what I'll do is I'll tell the guy at the comic shop, you know, your five best customers. You know, I'll give him so many and take five of them and just give it to your five best customers, and then the rest of it we can sell.
Hello?
I'm back. I hit the mute button by accident. Okay. But yeah, that's I'm looking forward to it. I know we got a lot of people I know on Facebook that are actually say they're looking forward to it. So we'll see how that goes.
Cool.
Yep. And as soon as I know, I'll make sure y'all know.
Now 1,000 more people know about it.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Or will.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. I'm not. Whenever it gets done, I'll be happy with it. I'm not chomping at the bit. There's a couple of people that are like, we're getting a little miffed that the guy wasn't done. But I mean, things happen. You know, people get sick. You know, do things for free. Sometimes the things that you get paid for have to take up precedence, and that's just the way it goes. So.
Yes.
And I mean, paying the artist. I remember, it's been so long since I did my comics, the couple that I did, and we didn't pay at that point. If the only thing we paid for was the publishing, the artist, I mean, guys were willing, you know, you'd go on to digital webbing, or I guess that was it at the time, but you could get guys to do stuff for free just to get published. Nowadays, everybody wants to get paid, and which is fine. I mean, it's not, you know.
If that's the only thing they're doing and they're going from job to job, I mean, I didn't mind it. I would have loved to have found somebody that done it for free. There was one, the guy that does the cover, Defu, I forget his full name, but Defu, I think he's generally called Defu, but he did the art for that image series, 50 Girls 50, I think was the name of it. And he's done a couple of people's stories that could actually afford his page rate. And, he does some great stuff. The cover looks awesome. So I might have to post that on there.
The first artist I ever worked with, and this name may or may not sound familiar to you guys. His name, Philip Sablik. That name sound familiar to you?
Yeah, guys? Actually, that does sound.
Yeah.
Does sound familiar.
He's currently the publisher at Top Cow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
So, but again, this was back when guys were working for would be willing to do it for free. So.
Yeah, and. The people at the Comic Experience gave us lots of places to look, and there wasn't anybody that was willing to do that. So, at least the guy I got did the lettering too for the same price. So, I mean, it could have been a lot more expensive, and I would have had to find another guy to do lettering or done it myself. Oh, God, that would have been horrible. I have no artistic talent. Stick figures is a stretch for me, I'm telling you. But I'm being totally serious. But yeah, so that made it a lot easier. But anyway.
Well, congrats. Thanks, to this point. So. Enjoy.
Yes. I am looking forward to it.
All right. Who's next? That would be you, Murray.
All righty. Well, I have been hitting up the local library, and I have been taking out series that I've meant to check out and have heard good things about, but haven't actually bought. So I looked at the first volume of American Vampire, by Scott Snyder and Stephen King and Raphael Albuquerque. Right. And it was good. I liked it. That series I could see picking up in floppies for sure. Like there's enough in each issue that it's a good meaty read each issue. It was and the artwork is beautiful. Raphael Albuquerque does just amazing stuff. I remember seeing him on Blue Beetle back a couple years ago before the New 52. He was the he was the artist that came in after Cully Hamner started the book. So big shoes to fill, but he did amazing stuff on that book. And after he left and the book was canceled eventually. After he left, he went on, I guess, eventually to do American Vampire with Scott Snyder, and it's good. It's beautiful. It's and it's a neat take on the vampire story. Like Scott Snyder, it's Scott Snyder's concept, but I guess he pulled Stephen King in to do.
Yeah, he did one of the stories.
He did, yeah, like he did a backup in the first five or six issues, and King like was so taken by the story that he wanted to do. I can't remember if he was originally going to do like just write an introduction or something, but he was like so taken with the concept that he wanted to be a part of it. So he wrote the first six issues back up.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's good. Like the series is good. It takes a look at I guess normally like you have the vampires and they're you know, they have the European sort of background. They're all from like Transylvania or Europe or wherever. And these vampires are very much set in America. They're sort of a new breed of vampire, so they're able to wander about in daylight, and they're a little different than the traditional vampire, and you get sort of like a class struggle going on between the European vampires and the American vampires that are starting to pop up. It's well done. The series now again, I've only read the first trade, so it's really just the introduction, but it looks at it takes place in time era. It's got sort of an Old West story that is done by Stephen King, and it looks at the creation of the very first American vampire, a character called, what's his name, Sweet?
Yeah.
Something Sweet.
I don't remember either.
Yeah.
Nobody. Before I forget, the first issue of that series is at 99 cents on Comicology. That's the one. I read that because of that.
Very good.
Yeah, so anyway, go ahead.
So yeah,
Is the main story, the Snyder story, is that set now, or is he also doing...
In this book, the main story was set sort of in the 1920s.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, just before... like silent film stars and just before sound came in. And the main character is a sort of a up and coming, well, not even up and coming, just a bit part actress who would like to have the bigger roles and unfortunately gets bitten. Mm-hmm. As these things tend to happen.
Yeah. God, I hate when that happens.
I know.
Yeah, that's a pretty healthy comic. It's 37 pages, the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's good. Raphael Albuquerque does the art for both the main story and the backup. And really, it's moody, and the coloring is great. Like in the Old West, it's kind of, you know, you got the dusty colors, and it's very Old West looking, but... In the 1920s, it's a little more bold, a little darker, a little brighter. It's a good series, and eventually the two characters sort of connect, and
And it's neat the way the two stories mingle or come together eventually. Now, I'm not sure the direction that it goes. From what I understand, each story arc kind of continues to look at a different era. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of it's going to be neat seeing the progression of the American vampires as they go through the, I don't know, the war era in the 50s, and I'm presuming they'll do other little time periods, but I've got the second book waiting for me to pick up at the library, so I will check that one out, and then I'll decide whether I want to pick them up and start. It's a series you could read issue by issue for sure by the floppies. I think if I follow it, I'll probably go trade by trade by trade. Mm-hmm. But it was good. It was a good meaty read, and the characters are they interest me, and the artwork is beautiful, beautiful. So yeah, those are all pluses.
It's not bad. I did like it.
And this is Vertigo, right?
It is Vertigo. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first thing Snyder did. And it got so popular, I think that's how he got the Batman gig. Because I never heard of him until he did Batman, and then I found, realized that he'd done the American Vampire. And that's the only reason I read that first issue, is because it was Snyder. Because I hate vampires, I really do. Except for the ones not vampire. I love that book. Anyway, go ahead.
There you go. So I picked up that series, and I picked up the first three trades of Sweet Tooth at the library, too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's also from Vertigo, and it's written and illustrated by Jeff Lemire. Mm-hmm. And it's good. That's one I wouldn't pick up in floppies. Like it, he...
I got that, because I read the first issue of that, and I'm like... But yeah, I can see how that would need to be one that you'd need to follow it pretty quickly.
The story that he's telling is it's a good story. It's interesting, and I'm digging the characters, but the way he tells the story, there's lots of meaningful empty panels, and for me, I don't think I would enjoy it month to month. I just don't think there'd be enough story there, but sitting down and reading a chunk of the trades, I'm digging it. It's like a apocalyptic end of the world sort of situation, and there's been an outbreak of some mysterious disease, the way these things happen to go, people are getting sick, and they're dying, and they're dying slowly. I guess they're all kind of living under a death sentence. Eventually they're all gonna get sick and die, I guess. But there's a good chunk of people that are still healthy. And the interesting thing is that the children that are being born now are all animal human hybrid sort of thing. So the main character, Sweet Tooth, is a 9 or 10 year old kid who happens to look like a deer. He's got, cute little antlers and a little fuzzy face, and that's sort of one of the interesting little elements of the story, in that the disease that hit America happened 6 or 7 years ago, according to the story, and none of the animal kid creatures started showing up until after the disease hit. But Sweet Tooth is 9 or 10 years old, which places him before the outbreak of the disease, which is one of the little mysteries that kind of propels the series forward. It's neat. Like, Sweet Tooth is just he was raised in, not in captivity, but his father kept him secluded in a little cabin in the woods, and he wouldn't let Sweet Tooth head out into the big bad world. So he's very sheltered, he's very innocent, and of course that lasts for all of 5 or 6 pages before before the world comes crashing in on little Gus there. Gus, and well, the other characters call him Sweet Tooth because he has a sweet tooth. He likes the chocolate.
Ah.
But, he's actually called Gus. And it's it's kind of a quest story. Like if you're trying to pigeonhole it, it's a story of trying at the moment anyway. The characters are on. At first, they were on a quest to get to this protected zone. And once they get there, things, of course, change, and they're now searching to they're on their way to another place to try to figure out some of the origins of this mysterious disease. And over the course of the series, you meet Gus, you meet Sweet Tooth, you meet some of the other little animal children creatures, you meet the big Terminator Deathstroke-like character who's the big mean bounty hunter who's probably got a heart of gold buried under there, under his gruff, fuzzy, cranky exterior. Those are the main characters right now, and then of course you got the government conspiracy wicked scientists that are hanging around in the background too. And it's good. It was a good story. Like I whipped through the three trades pretty quickly.
I couldn't have been more clueless about that series. I honest to God, I mean, what you're telling me right now, completely new information. I mean, I look at the promo art for it, and I'm like, there's a kid with antlers and furry face. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be picking that up. So now, I may.
I'd certainly look into it. Like it's a good read. Jeff Lemire does great character pieces. Like his characters are really well realized. You get a sense. Now, on the drawback, he's not real wordy in this book. But that's okay. Like I think back to his Essex County books, and they told a great story. And over the course of those three graphic novels, an amazing story, and you didn't need a whole lot of words, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but still. He told a great story. Like his characters.
Who are you
really,
and where have you done with me?
I know. His characters are really expressive though. And so in this book, you really get a sense of the characters, even though there's not a lot of chit chat and jibber jabber and stuff. But again, that makes like each individual floppy issue a pretty quick read. Like you can glean a lot out of the pictures and stuff, but you're still, it's a quick read, but that's what the trades are for. So, pick up the trades. I liked it. And then the last one I picked up, I have resisted reading this series for ever. Like it's been a series that I've been like, ugh, okay, I know I have to pick it up and I have to read it at some point, or I have to turn in my geek card, but it is not a series I wanted to read at all. I don't look at the TV show. It's like, well, I've seen like 5 minutes or whatever, but it was like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Let me guess. Hold on. Buffy?
No, Buffy I love. Oh, but Buffy, I'm not going to read the comics. For me, Buffy ended last show of season 7, and that's it. It's done.
I read the entire season 8, and it was great at the start, and it just went to hell at the end. Enough where I'm not probably ever going to read it, even if Whedon writes it, ever read another Buffy comic.
Yeah, anyway. See, to me, I'm happy with it ending as a TV series. Like, I know there's a ton of people out there that want to see the series continued and want to know what happens to all these characters, and I get that. But for me, it's such a series that is so tied into a TV series. Yeah. Like, to me, it just doesn't translate into comic at all. But I know it does for a ton of people, but for me, Buffy ended as they drove away from Sunnydale and the big hole in the ground, and that's where it ends for me. So,
well, I'll tell you one that you do need to read is Frey.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I've never picked that up.
That was awesome. I think that was Josh Whedon's first comic that he wrote, and it's about a Buffy in the future.
Right.
It's really good. But anyway, continue.
So what is the trade? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I just wanted to take a shot. You said it was a TV show that you've avoided. So
yeah. Okay, so it's The Walking Dead.
Oh,
really?
really. I could not have been more put off by the whole – like, to me, Robert Kirkman, I knew nothing about him until his little internet call to arms. And that drove me bananas. I was like, who are you to tell people that they have to do creative owned work and they can't do Superman and they can't work for the big two until they make it big and then they got to leave. And like, to me, that was such a turnoff. I'm like, I don't want to read anything you write.
Yeah, I was already reading Invincible when that happened. So,
see, I know nothing. I know he wrote for Marvel. I know he's got a ton of series out there. But Walking Dead to me was like zombies. Ugh. Kirkman. Ugh. So I stayed away from it. However, the wife is watching the TV show, and I thought, okay, I'll pick it up. So I pick up the first volume, and I read his little introduction, and I thought, oh, yuck. Because, again, it was Kirkman, and he was like, giving his attitude about this and that, and we're just as good as it. And oh, super turn off. However, I kept reading. I read the first trade of six issues. Beautiful artwork. Tony Moore, is that it? I think.
Yeah, he leaves after that first trade.
Yeah. But beautiful artwork. Like, it's great black and white, very realistic, cartoony, and it's beautiful work.
Mm-hmm.
And that first six issues were. They were okay. I was like, really? We have to go through – like, the biggest turnoff to me was the whole issue of the genders and the women are the hunter or the touchy-feely sweet things, and the guys have to be the big macho heroes, and the women are going to look after food. And I thought, really? This is taking place now and we're doing that?
Now, you can't tell me that that's not how it would break down if everything went to hell like that, though.
It would not break down like that.
Wait. It is so ingrained. Well, see, you're from Canada. But you're in the United States. That kind of – I mean, I'm not trying to be an ass, but that kind of mentality is ingrained into our culture. It's like – you don't even realize it until you get an adult. And I could see, well, especially they're talking about the South.
Well, see, that's what I was thinking. That's
Send out letters to Chris Mosby.
Hey, I live here. I can say this.
In the American South? Ugh.
In the South. Well, yeah. And you see, he's from Kentucky, which is not that far from here. And Atlanta is only 4 hours from where I live right now. And you see it all the time. And that's exactly the way. But when things really go to hell, that's when it, you know, they still have it in their head, especially in the first six issues, that they might be rescued.
Oh, yeah.
And they haven't broken out of, they're still in the old world, quote unquote, in their heads. And that's why that made sense to me. But anyway, continue.
From that point of view, sure, it makes sense, I guess, if you're living in wherever, the South. But to me, it was like, this is so 1980s. Like, really? We're still having this debate? Oh, come on. And then the only lady the only lady that is like, why am I doing this hunt and gathering stuff? I could be blah, 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 blah. I'm just as good as any man. She's, of course, killed off. What? Chop. Eaten. Well,
yeah.
Jibber jabber.
Spoilers.
Oh, I'm not telling you which lady, but
I don't even think she was in the TV show.
Anyway, so that totally bugged me. I'm like,
I felt the same way.
However, I had like the first four trades, so I set the first one aside. I picked up the second one, and there's a new artist, Charlie Adlard.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't love his art. I like it much more now.
Yeah, but it was quite. It's quite a big difference.
It was from like issue 6 to 7. But as you get further along, his art, I don't know if it tones down or like that first, the first issue he comes on, there's, you've got one of the main characters and her hair is like swooshing in the breeze and it's all flippy and all over the place. And it's like, wow, that's really over the top. We haven't had any over the top scenes like that before. Like it would have, Tony Moore just had everything grounded and realistic. And now we've got, you know, superhero hair flying out around her as she, but again, that is totally gone by the end of that second trade, and I've come to really like his artwork. Like, it suits the series, and it's good. It's good. But so, yeah, I read through the second, and then I read through the third, and then I read through the fourth, and, like, by around the fifth or sixth trade, I was like, kind of want to know what's going on now. I kind of want to see what's going to happen.
You still won't admit you like it after reading the sixth
trade. You know what? No, I do. It's a good series. I get why people like it. And by the sixth or seventh trade, you know, they've left aside all the traditional gender roles. And, of course, it took a zombie apocalypse to bring about equality in the sexes. But I guess you got to go with what you got to go with.
Well, see, I've got all the hardcovers. I don't remember how I got. I think I read it online first, and that's what got me hooked. So when I decided I was going to read them, I started getting the hardcovers, and having it, it's a larger size than a regular comic. So the art really hits you in the face more, and I'm just hooked on this thing. I've got all seven of the hardcovers. And the one thing I like about it the most is you have absolutely no idea what's going to happen when you turn the page.
Oh, I know.
It is so out there, and you don't have a clue. And reading as many comics as I've had, and of course I don't read the horror genre, so maybe this stuff is old. Some of this is old hat, but you just never know what happens in it. That's what I thrive on, I think, more than, and I mean, I hate zombies, but it's not about the zombies. It's about the people.
Yeah. Oh, totally. It is well worth reading. Like,
yeah.
And you're right. You have no clue what's going to happen. Like, by the end of the eighth trade, the series is kind of turned on its ear, and you're thinking, Wow. Like for a while it looked like they were heading towards something, and you thought, okay, this is doable, it's the end of the world, but they've got a little piece of peace in this dead world. But then of course Zippo, everything flips and it's turned, and
it's about ready to do that again, actually.
Oh, anyway, so I've got like trade number 10 waiting for me at the library on Tuesday.
You know, I'm having a hard time just fathoming that actually going into the library and getting a comic book.
You have a kick-ass library. I just pulled up my library's website. They've got Volume 1 of Walking Dead. That's it. They have all the Invincible ones, but the only Walking Dead that they've got in their whole library system, which is 7 libraries strong, is Volume 1.
No way.
I bet you, and I have never been into the Lee County Library here in Tupelo, but I bet you that they don't have any. But I could be wrong, and I just might have to fix that. time to buy some showcases.
Yeah. Our library system is pretty good. I don't know whether the librarians choose particular titles or whether they just have a chunk of donations that are given to them, but we've got the whole Walking Dead up to volume 14. I'm sure we've got a complete run of Sandman, and it looks like we've got a whole bunch of those old Vertigo series, Preacher and Transmet, and shelves and shelves and shelves of some sort of manga stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, now we have tons of too. Yeah.
And I just put on hold anyway, the probably 5 or 6 trades of Dan Slott's Spider-Man.
Oh.
I want to say from Big Time on, maybe?
Wow.
I tell you, I was a big Spider-Man fan in the 90s during the Secret Wars, the first one. And I quit at one point. And when they did the reboot of Spider-Man, I found like $5 hardcovers at one of the Chicago cons I went to. And I'm actually liking that. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know that I'd ever think of myself as a Spider-Man fan. Like, I read a lot of Marvel Team Up when I was a kid, and that's probably my Spider-Man. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm looking forward to checking out Dan Slott's stuff. He always He always does good interviews. And
he has been, honest to God, I mean, when I know that they were doing that rotating creator cast there for a while on, mm-hmm. on Spider-Man, but when he started, like, when he became the man on it,
mm-hmm.
With a single voice on the book, has just been tremendous. Not, taking nothing away from Wade's issue that's coming, or the Wade's issue.
Oh, yeah.
Which is incredibly great.
I read it yesterday.
Wow, that was an incredible issue with Daredevil in it.
Yes, it was.
Dan Slott's single voice in the book is bringing me back every single, almost every week, I guess, almost. Yeah. I mean, what, 3 issues a month, so.
I read that, and it made me want to get that big, huge stack of 10 trades I got and go through them. Or 10 or 12, probably. I don't know. I lost track.
Enjoy, Maria. I haven't gone back that far. I need to start back issuing Spider-Man based on my love of the Spider Island stuff and the current stuff. So I'm gonna have to start.
I don't think they've got any of the Spider Island. Well, I mean, it's probably too soon for any trade.
It has a trade. Yeah, the hardcover comes out, or the whatever comes out at the end of this month. So you're it ain't there yet.
Yeah.
You'll. I am going to have to catch up. And like I said, you've got an incredible library. I mean, I'm looking through some of the inventory at our local libraries. And yeah, they've got Sandman, and they've got some Frank Miller stuff and Mouse. And, but goodness gracious. I mean, I listen to you on these talks or on other places where you post it online or other podcasts you've been on. It's like, wow, what a cool library.
Yes. Yeah, we're pretty. We're lucky. We are lucky.
That's cool.
Now, do you have Shakespeare?
Shakespeare.
Shakespeare? What's that?
I'm sure we do.
Had to make room for all those Walking Dead trades from somewhere.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
12th Night or Volume 12?
Damn, I just can't decide.
I know. Well, I can decide pretty easily.
Romeo and Juliet or Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane? I don't know. Let's see.
Darn.
And let's see what else. So I have been going through my own back issues, and I've been reading The Flash. I've been reading The Flash from, like, the Wally West Flash from when...
Yeah, I have that entire...
Which one? From when Bill Mesner Loebs came on.
Ah, okay.
I have
not all the way back to to Baron stuff, but when Mesner Loebs came, okay.
I have the Baron stuff. I never ever liked it. Mm-hmm. I just didn't care for his take on Wally, and I thought I'm not a fan of Butch Geiss, and those were the two main characters. So I think I've got the first 7 or 8 issues, and then I just dropped it. But then when Greg LaRocque and Bill Mesner Loebs came on, I picked it up and. I kept going, and it's a good read. Like it's probably one of my favorite Flash runs. I haven't got into the Wade stuff again, and I might once I get into that might change. I might think, oh, Wade's pretty awesome too, because I know I liked it when it came out. But mm-hmm. but I think Mesner Loebs and LaRocque are probably my favorite of the Flash. Creative teams.
What was the main focus? I know that Mike Barron's main focus on Wally West was what a douche he was. How did Mesner Loebs deal with the character?
Well, you know, and that's the great thing. Like I really like when creators come on, when new creators come on, when they're able to take all the early stuff or whatever came before them. And just build it into their story. So that's what he does. Like he takes Wally from wherever he was at, and he just keeps moving him forward. So yeah, Wally's still a bit of a dick, and he's a ladies' man, and he's, you know, he's learning the ropes. But Bill gives him a huge supporting cast. So he brings back Tina McGee and Jerry McGee, the two speed scientists, and he throws in an older gentleman. I forget where he came from, Mason something or other, and I forget how he's introduced. He's just there one day and is a neighbor of Wally. Oh, that's it. I think Wally is suddenly made poor, and he goes to live in this old brownstone, and Mason is one of the residents there. So, he gives Wally a huge supporting cast of really interesting characters, and then he just tells these really down to earth stories. And he gives each of the characters every issue pretty much a chance to shine or to jibber jabber a little bit, and they're really character based stories. Like every issue, for the most part, is a done in one. He builds up to a couple of three parters and two parters, but there's lots of singles interspersed in between there, and it's really just Wally. Every issue, learning a little bit more, growing a little bit more, becoming a man.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that must be the part where McGee becomes Speed Freak, I think was the character, the villain's name.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I didn't start reading that until Wade was on, but I went and picked up all the issues. So a lot of that I haven't read.
Yeah, the Speed Freak stuff is Mike Baron just before.
Oh, okay.
Just before. So he's rehabilitated and fixed by the time Bill comes onto the book.
Okay. So I'm ahead of it or behind the game there, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, but it's great. Like, he brings in all these all the rogues get a chance to kind of appear, and some of them are reformed a little bit, and others are not, but it's really neat. Like, the stories are just told with great character moments, and they're really, really good. Like, if you're ever in a dollar bin and you see some, pick them up. They're good reads, and there's lots of little weird moments. Like, you've got for every appearance of the rod or whatever you have, you've got Wally turning into a porcupine creature, or you've got
that's right.
There's lots of little weird things that play out really, really well and give you great insight into the care. And it's like full. It's almost like you're reading one of those NBC and this is one to grow on stories, because he'll touch on little issues. Like, he'll throw in homelessness and he'll throw in race relations or like, there's just neat little things that are dropped in throughout. Never really preachy, but they're just dropped in there. I'm almost at the point where Pied Piper comes out to Wally. I think that's in another issue or two. So
he's the one who scripted that. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that's in another issue or two.
Yeah, one of the best ones of that, I just pulled it up on Comic Book DB, and I still remember it to this day. I think I even bought it when it came out. I don't remember, but it's number 54 from that series, and William Messner Loebs wrote it. Greg LaRock art, but it's the story's called Nobody Dies. He's on a plane, for whatever reason, I don't remember. Hijacker, you know, so on and so forth. He stops him, but something happens. The guy gets a shot off, and it blows a hole in the plane. And one of the stewardesses gets sucked out. They're like at 30,000 feet. Well, after making sure everybody's else okay, of course, he's a Flash, so that's quick. With no plan, he jumps out. Because in his mind, he says to himself, nobody dies today. And he jumps out, and he catches up with her, and it's this whole thing of all the stuff he does to try to keep them both alive. And you know, he starts getting – he's using all his energy and his metabolism, how it works. He needs energy, and she happened to have, like, 2 or 3 packets of peanuts in her pocket. She gives it to him, and it's just such a great issue. And he ends up saving himself and her, you know, just doing whatever he could think of, but he had absolutely no plan when he jumped out, and that's probably one of my favorite. That's one of those issues that why I love comics. That's one of the first ones I think of.
Yeah, it's good. He does some really good stuff with the character.
Yeah,
and leaves him in a good spot for Wade to take over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that was a good... When Wade took over, that was such a great... I loved that.
Yeah, I remember really enjoying the Wade issues a lot.
Yeah, that's when he became one of my favorites, was during that. He was on that for over 7 years, I think.
Murray takes the name of our podcast literally and Tales from His Long Box.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's not a bad idea, actually. I think I'm going to... I may go short box diving.
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, that was one of the ideas that I had for this podcast, was that too. That very thing. Just go through and pick some issues out, and I was going to talk about that Flash issue, as a matter of fact.
There you go. We're on the same psychic wavelength.
Yep.
Woo!
So.
Okay. Wow. Are we out of time? No, I'm kidding.
No, I know. Let's have a little news break here. Things that happened since our last podcast. We've got, with this actually substantiated, you got, where did it go? We're talking about this on the Facebook page. James Reaser, that was it. That was the name I was looking at. Disgust. He was disgusted, but that's not what I was getting at. John Rosen speaks out over creative and editorial differences on Static Shock. A known blogger, which I personally never heard of, but there's so many comic book blogs out there, you know. I guess Danny Donovan was talking about the cancellation of Static Shock, and John Rosen actually wrote something in the comments. He first said... Static definitely had the best potential of all DC superheroes of color and should have been treated like an A-list character with a huge push. But, of course, I'm not the least bit surprised as this is how it turned out. And he goes on to comment, I went into Static Shock with a lot of ideas. Among them was showing that Static wasn't simply an A-list character, but one of the most powerful in the DCU. I really wanted the series to be fun and exciting and to bring the same degree of creativity to that I put into Zombie, balanced with making Virgil's personal life at least as engaging as his superhero life. I also saw Static Shock as an excellent gateway through which to pull the rest of the milestone characters into DCU. I quickly learned that none of these plans were going to see fruition. I wound up being shunted to the sidelines as the writer, while McDaniel's quote-unquote high concept criminal syndicate made up of Power Rangers and a big monosyllabic... That's a big word. Monosyllabic thug took center stage, and Harvey, Richard's editor, ideas of the two Sharons and slicing off Static's arm were implemented as desperate means of trying to draw attention to the book. And he goes on, and his main contributions were naming the school after Dwayne McDuffie, including hardware, some dialogue, but mostly he wasn't in there, so he quit. He wasn't used barely at all. I think, I don't know. I like the book, but to be completely honest, each one of those books, I read it and almost immediately forget it. Because I pick up the next issue, and then it's like, well, I don't even remember what happened. So, yeah, that's unfortunate news that's still kind of going on. I don't think that's going on with every book, but it's obviously happened with that one.
I think the biggest unfortunate to come out of that is that I don't think Zombie is coming back.
So. I don't think so either.
Not anytime soon.
Which is a shame, because that was one of the bigger disappointments when they rebooted the DCU.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I that was a great, great book. And that Zombie XOMBI, by the way, for those keeping score, was a great Vertigo book, but set in the DC universe. It was a shame to see it go, and I had hopes that it would make the cut, at least second or third wave. But
well, it did get solicited at least once, because I remember we were bringing that up. But
yeah,
I think it's pretty much dead now. If it wasn't, it definitely is. And I'm looking at the full solicitations for April, and it's not on there. So there's your
DC, for whatever reason, just fumbles the ball with Milestone characters time after time after time. It's like, I don't get it. It's like they want to have them, but they don't want to have them. So they, I don't know. Like, well,
what I'm hoping it's not it is, well, I heard something. This is a little segue, but it does relate to this. I was listening to a short interview about from, I forget the guy's name. He was in the first Iron Man movie that played James Rhodes. Anyway, there's a movie coming that came out this week called Red Tails. It's about the Tuskegee Airmen in World War II. They're a bunch of black pilots that were all
sick.
Terrence Howard. That's it. I knew it was Howard, but I didn't want to get the first name right. But anyway, he had said that they had it's about, you know, the Tuskegee Airmen. If you don't know your history, they were all segregated into one squadron, and they were looked down upon and not treated well because they were black. Which, you know, big surprise. This is in the 40s. So apparently they had trouble marketing. All these production firms didn't want to put it out because black people were the heroes and white people were the bad guys. Well, it's like, how are we going to sell this? Well, I don't understand what the problem is. You just market it.
Yeah, you sell the story.
Right, and it took, I guess, George Lucas put up $58 million of his own money to get this film out. But that was the thing. So with that in mind, beginning to wonder if that's the same thing, you know, with the Milestone stuff.
I think that where DC has dropped the ball, and I think that's part of it, but I think where they dropped the ball is, unlike when they got hold of the Charlton characters back in the 80s, mm-hmm. when they did that, they almost made it like these characters had always been part of the DC universe. It's like, oh, here they go, and just sort of drop them in mm-hmm. with their story in progress, where it seems to always feel like when they do the Milestone characters, they're making such a point of the fact that these guys have been segregated, and I think people don't like being hit over the head like that. First mm-hmm. of all, with such a blunt instrument, and second of all, just, you know, make them characters that are superheroes that, you know, have always existed in the DC universe, and they'll eventually, you know, they'll slowly catch on, and they need to be, in this day and age, it's not as easy to start a title fresh, so you mm-hmm. know, slowly introduce them, make them part of the Titans, make them part of the Justice League, Justice Society, whatever, then food them out into their own book. It's not 1986 where you can throw a Booster Gold or a Blue Beetle or a Captain Atom out there and be able to let it ride for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you brought up those red circle characters, as they were called last time, but I don't know if you guys heard, but when Archie got the rights back, they're actually going to make comics about those, but digital only, about those characters.
Cool.
I don't know if that's still going, but I heard that a couple months ago.
So.
Anyway.
Huh. All righty.
It's a good piece of news about Mr. Rosen. I hope he finds a home. I hope, if not at DC, if not at Marvel, then, you know, hopefully he can, I don't know what else he's done, to be honest with you, but maybe something Image or Boom or...
Image puts out good books. I mean, they give people a lot more freedom, it seems like. In fact, I think Sterling Gates that's what he's doing right now, is working on a book for Image. So it seems like I caught that in a glimpse of that anyway. So, but anyway.
You mean Sterling Gates of Hawk and Dove fame?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
He's taking that off his resume.
Yeah.
Hawking what?
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier on the Facebook page, listeners, too, about that. Which brings me to another thing. The other thing we're going to talk about, and we talked about our Facebook page, but those of you that hear about Image, and we mentioned Mr. Kirkman earlier, Rob Liefeld and him were working on a book called Infinite, which to me, and it supposedly was actually supposed to be in the 90s style, which pretty much means Liefeld style, but they were doing a book together called Infinite, and they're canceling that due to quote-unquote creative differences. And Bleeding Cool, yes, I know, Bleeding Cool, but this, you know, there's actual evidence to back this up. So sometimes they do come up with good things. But anyway, 5 days ago, and this was written yesterday, Rob Liefeld tweeted, Infinite Fans update. I tried a new finisher inker over 14 pages of issue 5. I loved them, but split decision at Skybound. Re-inking them now. I'll show all of the rejected pages in the hardcover. I want everybody happy with the final product. And then Liefeld just tweeted, and that was at the time of the article, unfortunately, creative differences have sunk the infinite. It's over. Because of my desire that my work looking the way I intended, .. it's over. Artistically, I'll continue to seek out talented collaborators to work with. That keeps me energized for the next 25 years. For 10 years, all my printed work was printed from my pencils. Now I'm rediscovering the appeal of working with a variety of inkers. So, yeah.
So, in other words, he's going to be doing Garfield. Okay.
Well, apparently he's going to be working on 3 DC books is actually what he's talking about, what we talked about last week. For those that you haven't heard, he's completely taking over Deathstroke. And gave him big shoulder pads, believe it or not. And we're taking odds on whether he has feet or not. So if you want to join that pool, send an email to – no, just kidding. Anyway.
That's another book. Deathstroke's Feet is a whole other title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? They could do that maybe like they do with Deadpool. Deadpool Core, Deadpool's Feet. Oh, damn it. I'm giving away free title advice to Marvel again. Damn. Let's see.
Don't pick on the Deadpool. I'm a Deadpool fan.
He's going to be dead soon, isn't he?
Maybe.
Okay. All right, then. Anyway, that's pretty much what I got.
Yeah.
I think.
Me too.
All right. Well, then let me talk about it. Let me talk, damn it.
No. All right. And while I'll figure out something to talk about while you're doing that.
All right. So... I listen to a podcast every once in a while, other than this one. No, I listen to this. My wife recommended I listen to this one. It's called Radiolab. And it is, you know, it's long format or short format, depending on what they have to talk about. They did one recently about action figures. And it was specifically about the Marvel action figures, and it was more specifically about how the United States government, this is real world stuff, the United States government views how we impose tariffs on imported products. And in this case, the difference between a toy and a doll. And I kid you not. So one day these tariff lawyers that were outsourced by Marvel were looking over the tariff rates, and they noticed that all of their dolls, all of their guys were being classified as dolls and being taxed at 12%.
Holy crap.
Import rate. Whereas toys, like Transformers, are only charged 6.9% when they're imported. So they're like, wait a minute, what is the difference? So the difference turned out to be, according to the United States government, a doll represents a human being, whereas a toy is basically everything else. It's monsters and robots and so on and so forth. Well, so these two lawyers, they went – this was a 10-year process, by the way. This started back in 93 and it ended in about 2003. So it's an old story, but I found it very interesting. They argued as far up as the Supreme Court that, you know, these characters, specifically the Marvel superhero characters, were not actually – human. And the test case ended up being the two major test cases that were discussed in this particular podcast were Beast and Wolverine.
Well, yeah, that's two good ones.
Yeah, I mean, they kept saying, well, no, you know, these guys all are human. They have arms, they have legs, they have heads, they have mouths, they have hair. So they pull out of their bag of tricks, they pull out the Beast action figure, and they're like, well, look at this guy. And I said, okay, fine. We'll give you that. No, you can do that one at 6.9%. And so they said, okay. And then they pull out Wolverine. Well, he's got claws coming out. Okay, fine. We'll. So eventually they got it. They determined, the United States government finally determined that all of the Marvel action figures, all of them, none of them are human. They're all monsters or beasts. We're talking about including Captain America, including Spider-Man. The irony, and I thought this was the great thing about this podcast, was talking about how Marvel spends so much time in their comic books and in their movies, say, you know, with the mutants and the heroes trying to be human. And the governments in the movies are saying, no, they're monsters, especially like in X-Men number one.
Yeah, right.
Oh, they the movie, I mean.
Yeah.
And also in the comic books, you know, the humans, so to speak, are always doing their damnedest to say, no, we hate you. Don't come anywhere near us. Matter of fact, the X-Men tagline is always, you know, fighting to defend a world that hates them. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So then in the real world, Marvel, in an effort to save millions of dollars of money, are saying, no. All these characters are in fact monsters, and the government saying no. In order to keep their millions of dollars of tax revenue yearly, saying no, they're human. It's incredibly interesting.
So what you're saying is the economic crisis is Marvel's fault.
That's right.
Sorry, I just couldn't help it. But no, you're right. That is a very interesting story.
I thought it was deep and fascinating, and started talking about how, you know, Marvel tries so hard to humanize their characters, you know, with especially the X-Men. You know, they actually interviewed Bryan Singer briefly for this podcast about the coming out scene in X-Men 2 where Bobby Drake reveals to his parents that he's Iceman, and mm-hmm. his mom says something to the effect of, well, can't you just stop being a mutant, you know?
Can you stop being stupid, maybe?
Right, yeah, thanks, Mom. Thanks, Mom. No, you know how it, you know, they talk about how the X-Men now represent kind of the coming out of gay men and stuff. And people, you know, I'm sure Darren Noel could talk about, you know, how someone probably said to him at one point, well, can't you just not be gay?
I'm sure. That's that kind of mentality is pretty rampant down here.
Oh, it's rampant everywhere. I mean, goodness gracious. I used to live next door to West Hollywood, and I'm sure it enough of those men and women heard it from family members or mm-hmm. friends over the years. In any case, I found it, again, it's a 15 minute list. It's like a 10 minute listen, and just I've probably listened to it like 4 or 5 times now, just because it's just so it makes you think.
They got some interesting topics. I just pulled their website up. Got one on the Bad Show. It's called latest episode. Episode of Radiolab, we wrestle with the dark side of human nature, ask whether it's something we can ever really understand or fully escape. There's one on murder. Psychologist who found that 91% of men and 84% of women have at least one serious homicidal fantasy.
Oh, for sure.
I'm above average. I know I've had way more than that.
I was gonna say, that sounds like a typical day.
Yeah, I know. A day at work, yeah. I really need to be here. Anyway. Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I might have to add that. I've actually been busy at work, believe it or not. Even though I've done the best I can not to show up, I'm still busy there. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, that is very interesting.
So, and my other two things, I put out the challenge of reading the titles that we were suggesting a couple weeks ago.
I forgot about that.
So I picked my two. I did, and I'll take up the gauntlet this week. You guys can jump in whenever you guys feel like.
Good idea. I think there's a couple you guys mentioned that I've already read, but go ahead.
So I read Batman and Robin, and I thank you. It was a good suggestion. I haven't read it, the latest issue, but I read the one where it's got Robin busting out of the head.
Number 5 is, I just read that earlier, I think yesterday. That is something. They actually named two of the people that trained Batman in it. So, but yeah, well, it's wow.
I'll get to it. Number 4 was really good. And easy to catch up on, since I read number 1 and mm-hmm. but stopped, and Thank you for doing that, sir. No problem.
It takes a big man to admit something like that.
Sure. I'm losing weight though.
Gee, I had to read a comic book. How terrible!
I know, life sucks.
Well, okay. So what was the other one?
The other one, and Murray, no offense, man. I picked up Cold War. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And going on, what you said that the first issue not incredibly wordy at the beginning. Probably the first 10 pages or so, not many words, none in fact used. And John Byrne's book. I get that stuff. I thought it was okay. It wasn't great though, man. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I had to say I tried it though. And you know that was the challenge.
I'm gonna have to listen to that episode.
You and I tend to agree on most things that we talk about here, and so I grant you that. But this one, it felt a little cliche. It felt a little John Byrne misogynism was definitely in there. There was no question about that.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, they're not. I don't think there was a single woman in it that didn't have their breast implied, at least, you know, for a panel.
Wow, yeah, that just make that sound like it's a bad thing.
I got nothing against breasts. I'm all for them, but
well, I'm glad you went on record about that.
Thank you. The more news. So
which one was the ones you said? Probably The Boys and what?
Oh Christ! Shade.
Oh, I'm reading that already.
Boys, Shade. Oh my God, I don't even remember what the other three were.
I don't know. I didn't take notes that episode like I usually do. I'll have to listen to it again. That's cool.
Is there easy for me to figure it out? And I will, yeah, if you guys really want to do it, I will send you the.
No,
the
I do. You did it, so
you. You mentioned iZombie.
Yeah.
Okay, I've read the first issue, the first trade of that, so I'm good.
Oh my God, I don't remember what the other ones were. They'll come to me though. Oh, New Mutants from Marvel,
all right.
The late series. And there was something else, I'm sure, because we did five.
I'll listen to that episode and see what you guys said.
But I can totally see where you know, John Byrne, he's got a real hard on for James Bond. It's, you know, it's on record somewhere that he does. And this is clearly saying, okay, if I can't do James Bond, I'm going to do this Cold War book. I mean, that was no question about that.
Yes, so. It's very much in the espionage.
Yeah.
Vein.
Yeah. You know, interesting. Maybe the first issue is not the best. Maybe it's better read as a whole. You know, all four issues, I think, is what it is right now. Or six issues. So.
Yep, four.
So maybe it reads better in collected form, where you get to see the whole story in one place, like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
very true. Yeah.
So but don't
first issue didn't work for you. All righty.
It did not. So don't bother recommending anything. No, I'm saying. You have me intrigued with Sweet Tooth, so I'm going to see if I can find a copy of that at the library, or perhaps a used or discounted copy offline.
Every time you say that, man, it's like at the library. I'm just like, what? When did I cross over to this universe, man? And this blows my freaking mind.
We go almost every other week to the library with our kids. So and our main library has a pretty extensive graphic novel section.
I'm gonna have to check just for curiosity. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to check locally out of curiosity, but I doubt it.
Yeah, the huge manga section. I mean, geez, please, it's crazy big. But I will see what's available there. And Sweet Tooth is not online though. Sad to say.
Yeah.
Anyhow, actually, nothing but Jeff Lemire, now that I'm looking, is on there. So.
Oh, those anti-Canadian libraries.
Oh, is he Canadian? Well, never mind then.
Totally.
I get my fill of Canadians right here every week.
And on the Legion podcast, don't forget that.
Oh, God, there's two of them there, aren't there? Oh,
yeah. Geez. But they're okay. Well, Paul's okay anyway.
All right, yeah.
I can bash him since I know he doesn't listen.
Anyway.
Yeah, you you guys were talking about that Spider-Man run, I just thought I'd bring up one of the places I go, and I'm going to give away a secret here, so don't everybody go buy all the books that I want, okay? So, anyway. One of this really cool website, you get really, really, really cheap comics and trades. It's called FearlessReadersOnline.com, and they get stuff in constantly. This guy, he buys stuff in pallets from people that can't sell them and sells them for real cheap. For example, I was talking about the brand new day. Volume 1 of the trade of it went for 20 bucks cover. You get it for $5 on the off that site. And a lot of those ones you guys are talking about, you know, getting – this is before Big Time and any other. They've got – you know, some of the hardcovers are $6. We're talking $25, $30 hardcovers. There's like the one where Obama was in Spider-Man. That trade is called Election Day. $5 for the trade. And they got the hardcover sealed for $5 too, because there's just crap loads of those around there. And a lot of the ones I just was looking here, and there's one of the ones I don't have right now. They've got it in hardcover for $6. I might pick that up as soon as we get done. But I bought stuff from them before. That's how I finished my Dreadstar run, you know, issues was from this site. So just the Fearless Readers Online.
They have no sweet tooth on there for
that's the thing. They buy a lot of Marvel stuff because Marvel stuff is non-returnable. So if you want to get cheap Marvel trades, this is the place to go. And you can search if you go to the graphic novel section, you can click and say only the stuff that's been added in the last week or everything. And, you know, I did everything, 3 pages of the Amazing Spider-Man, even stuff back when JMS was writing it is in there. But they have single issues of Valiant and Comico and Silver Age, and they have a weekly special, and it's like no telling what it could be. Yeah, they haven't done it in a while, but like they had the Art of Thor book, which I think was $50. They had it for $15 on here, and they had – Invincible Iron Man Omnibus that was going for – I don't see how much it was going for. They were selling it for $25. But, I mean, they just have stuff on there all the time, and they're constantly getting new books. And, you know, you can look at the single issues of DC or whatever, and you could probably just, you know, if you can't find it anywhere else, give it a check there. They might have it, and you just keep checking back because, like I said, they consistently – have new stuff.
We need a graphic novel exchange program. And my wife,
you know, I was actually thinking about that. Yeah,
my wife participates in this online group where they, you know, you can essentially just trade books online. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got books to trade. Okay, you put them out there. You ship them off. You pay for the shipping on it, mm-hmm, to someone else. But then you gather points and you start like, okay, well, this person's given a lot of books away, so, you know, yeah, I'll give them a book if they ask for it, and it's a great system.
Yeah, because I was just thinking, I got that compendium of Invincible, and I have the first 5 trades of Invincible sitting here that, you know, would be perfect, you know, somebody to check them out and see if they wanted to, you know, continue. So, something to think about.
It is. All right, I'm spent. I got nothing else.
Got nothing else? Oh, we're only an hour and a half. I don't really have that much either.
All right, then we can wrap it up.
Yeah, because I've gone through my incredibly large stack of comics that I've had stockpiled, and I've got about 10 left, so I want to finish that today.
Ooh.
And I start kicking out on those Spider-Man that I have.
I'm going to go watch the Patriots beat the Ravens then. I think that's
okay. Really good. All right, then.
Excellent.
Okie doke. Until next week.
Great.
And let's see. Oh, wait. The boilerplate, as Paul calls it. If you want to contact us, give us an email at podcast@ghostfromthelongbox.com. And there's the Facebook page. We even have a Twitter account. If you want to follow, I post news. A lot of the news that I post in the Facebook forum, it's at TFT Longbox. You can give that a check. And, you know, any messages sent to that, I'll get them post haste, and I can share with our fellow podcasters. And that's about it. That's it for next week.
Alrighty. Catch you later.
Okay. And we're out.
So we're going to have a guest next week again. Is that right?
Yeah. He said anytime on Sunday.
Okay.
It's fine for him. But if we could come up with a time beforehand, that would probably be better than wait till like Thursday. So just be thinking.
Oh, I'm sure by Saturday night we'll know when we're going to do this.
Okay. Oh. Anyway, he once a month apparently he travels for his job, but that particular next week is a good week for him. So
good.
All right.
What were we gonna do again? Number fours.
Yeah, number fours.
Okay, that's good. Right. Wow, we are really ahead of the game.
All right. Sounds good. We will see
you guys then. Have a good Sunday.
All right.
Yeah, two. Bye bye.
All right. Talk to you next week.